Now stay tuned for To Your Health, where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. And by Rebecca's Natural Foods in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. Now here is your host, MC Blair.
Good morning. Good morning. MC Blair here. And we are To Your Health. We're on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And I've got a real treat. We have got Carrie and Brooke and Brian from Elysium Honey Company. And that's a great interview. And might as well start right now. I'll tell you what, it's so beautiful out there. And I had a great time visiting with them and learning about honey and bees. We actually have a section in here where the bees will be talking to you. Yes, indeed. Had a ball doing it. So without further ado, let's get to it.
A customer, first name?
Carly.
Okay. Let's do this. MC Blair here. I'm at the Elysium Honey Company in Batesville. Beautiful, beautiful property. And I'm sitting here with Carrie Messler, Brooke Savage, and Brian Morse. And so the first thing I have is talk to the bees, but I guess we'll get to that, you know, because they'll definitely tell the story. I'd like to start with Carrie. What do you do here at the Elysium Honey Company, or should I ask Brian?
Well, I'm the managing director.
Okay.
Well, so my job is to make sure that the company runs along smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be marketing, sales, personnel, anything that it takes to just make sure that as an entrepreneurial startup that we continue to grow successfully both in the Charlottesville area and the areas around it.
Well, that's good. That's excellent. You got something to add, Brian?
Do you want to know my role?
Yeah, your role. I'm sorry. I'll edit that out.
You wanted me to add
Carrie's
role.
I'm sorry. So, Brian, what is it that you contribute to the Elysium Honey Company?
My role is related to the environment and the habitat for pollinators and the bees. So my background is in ecology and wildlife biology and management, and I help establish and educate about the need for a sustainable environment that the bees can function in, having a healthy biodiverse ecosystem, flowers for them to forage on, water, all the necessary things that an animal needs to survive.
Well, that's excellent. And Brooke, you are the beekeeper, is that correct?
One of the
yes. Beekeepers.
Yes. Right. I focus on hive health specifically and management, and then secondarily I also connect apiary owners with their bees and keep them informed and educate new beekeepers as well.
Now, you said earlier that bees are actually not declining, is that correct?
Wouldn't say bees are not declining. I would say that there is not a consensus in the community.
Okay.
And that there are some alternate viewpoints to say that we actually have more managed colonies than before, but we're not keeping them alive and they're not prospering in a healthy environment the way they were before. That part we can all agree on.
Okay. And the something about backyard beekeepers in general, or
I'd rather not go on the record.
Rather not go into that.
I don't want to disparage backyard beekeepers because they contribute so much to keeping bees alive with their enthusiasm, their engagement, and their energy. That being said, we know that bees are a difficult subject. They're hard to keep alive, and you have to dedicate a tremendous amount of energy to manage them properly. And it's not necessarily the best activity for a person who has a, you know, full-time employment, because the number one thing about managing bees is you have to do it on their schedule, not yours. You can't visit them at night. If it's raining and they're starving, you still have to go into the hive. So I find that backyard beekeepers have a different focus. It's that part. I don't know if you want to edit that out, but that's the reality. I think as a company, we really need to foster our relationship with the backyard beekeepers.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. what the you Brian, you mentioned the environment, the wildflowers, native flowers, that sort of thing. And do you find that you bring those in, or, you know, you're somewhere and you see a patch and maybe transplant them to another field? How do you manage that?
We have a couple of different approaches. Mm-hmm. We actively look for landowners that are engaged in habitat work already and may be interested in developing an apiary on their properties. We also work to educate and promote the establishment of some of these habitats as well. We drive around Albemarle County and Central Virginia, and we see these beautiful green hay fields with the hay bales, and it's, you know, it's picturesque, but those are actually ecological deserts for bees. There's no flowers out there for them to feed on. If there were flowers, they're being cut at the end of May. And so we look for engaging partners that want to do something a little bit different with their land and establish a more thriving environment, and to convert some of those sterile lands into more vibrant, biodiverse forage patches for the bees.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I was talking with one of the farmers in the area. He was saying that the what needs to happen is education so that people are engaged in moving forward. You know, keeping it going rather than inheriting it off to some developer, you know, because you can get $10,000 an acre or more.
Right.
So that's really cool. So are you finding more and more people getting engaged?
Definitely. Yeah. There's a lot of interest. There's been a lot of initiatives and focus on bees as well, because there's been a decline in our native bees, and we're seeing so many problems with honeybees these days. You can't just leave them in a box and come back and expect to get honey. There's a lot more that goes into them, and part of that is feeding them and mm-hmm. forage. And you don't want to just feed them sugar water the whole time. You want them to have a wide diet of wildflowers. They're emerging in March, or those first warm days in the spring, and they need food all the way to October, and we need to have a palette of food options for them throughout the entire time. And a lot of people are really getting into this, but from monarch butterflies to honeybees to even looking at some of our native bees that people really weren't paying attention to anymore. And these environments are aesthetically pleasing. They're full of beautiful wildflowers.
So, yeah.
There's been a growing interest, and I'm seeing a trend towards moving that direction. People want to put away the lawnmower and see more wildlife.
Wow, that's really neat. Carrie, how do you, through education and marketing, do you find that must be working if more and more people are becoming engaged?
Absolutely. I think that our area, Charlottesville, we're quite blessed to have a pretty progressive mindset about our interaction with the planet. More and more people are realizing that if they take small steps to support the spacers around them, that they thrive, and also other species, as Brian was saying, not just bees and butterflies, but, you know, we see the rise of things that have meant to be living here, and it is possible to live harmoniously with them. And it's a little bit magical, to be honest. And when people start to experience that, even just, for example, driving by the fields here at Elysium that Brian worked so hard on, when mm-hmm. people see those, they slow down and they take it in. And we want people to realize that those opportunities are there. And by supporting small businesses, they're starting to help us grow that.
So, Brooke, you engage some of the local schools and school children in a certain program? Is that a...
Yeah, we try to encourage them to explore concepts of biodiversity and habitat restoration and also pollination through some hives. So at Western Albemarle High School, the students at the Environmental Sciences Academy have two hives, and we discuss threats and how their biological functions operate, and how we as people can support and manage them. It's very nice to see the young people go in. Obviously, they like to take selfies and group pictures of bees. Honestly, they're great photos, and to see their excitement level is really invigorating for me. Yesterday, I had a client at a private apiary approach me, and he came with his family, and I wasn't expecting them, so it kind of threw off my schedule a little bit of what I had planned to do. But it was amazing to see someone come in and really beam. The whole family got their garb together, and they were wearing it, and they were holding frames. And I recognize that's what we're doing, is we're connecting people to the land and to insects in a way that they hadn't been able to before.
So you say holding frames. Is that that's what's inside the
yeah,
the hive?
Yes, the comb is supported by a rectangular wooden structure. The bees will build wax comb in between, and then they will fill it with either their offspring, their brood, we call it, or pollen or honey.
That's really interesting. So, but you guys help set up apiaries, right? And you consult with folks?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, we work with engaged landowners that are interested in having bees for a variety of reasons, not just the honey, but also pollination services. They want to help the bees. And so at the Elysium Honey Company, we work with them to develop an apiary, pick a good location. We help them protect them through, you know, we're in bear country, so we need to protect those hives from the bears when they're hungry. And then also with management. And through that management, Broken our beekeepers will work with the landowners and help educate them so that they're really engaged, they get their hands in the hives, and they can assist with all the process, and they can learn almost like an apprenticeship as well. And it's been a great partnership for us, and sharing resources.
That sounds great. So setting up apiaries, you have some in Charlottesville, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have them throughout the county.
Mm-hmm.
In what other counties? Nelson, Orange,
Green.
So a lot of driving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. So the whole surrounding counties. You know, I've always said we could just get everybody to work together. Oh, right. You know, you know, that would really be so.
Subject of
healing.
Pollination fields that Brian is putting in. On average, 1 acre of pollinator meadow will support 2.5 hives. And sometimes when I drive around, I'll see someone with 10 hives in their backyard, and I look around, and there's a lot of mowed lawns and manicured landscapes, and I find that stressful. I think of the hundreds of thousands of honeybees heading out every day and really desperately searching for food. So we try to balance all of the numbers of hives that we install with appropriate forage for them. And if there is an insufficient supply, then we request that the landowner supplement with a meadow. And that partnership has worked out really well. So in some of the hives, just a year's difference from maturity for the meadow, I'm seeing a tremendous amount of food coming in. And as a beekeeper, that just makes me feel so much more comfortable for their health.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So they, how far will they go? Obviously, they'll keep going. 5 miles? Okay.
Two. So we really focus on a 2-mile radius. And we try to make sure that they have a clean, appropriate, natural water source. And we also make sure that they have plenty of diverse forage. And as Brian mentioned earlier, it needs to happen throughout the season. From
right.
spring to fall, we need to make sure there's a multiflora.
So what do you do in the winter?
They do not hibernate. They cluster into a football-shaped size. And they're actually a really interesting way that they overheat. So the queen and the brood nest will be in the direct center of a ball. And then, almost like emperor penguins, they have heater bees that surround them, and they have an insulating shell. And what they will do is they have wings that they can unhook, and they can vibrate them inside the cells to create heat. And then they have an insulating layer, and then they take turns cycling in and out to make sure that the heater bees are making, and the insulating bees, and then right in the center, the nurse bees. Everyone's doing their function and working cooperatively, but the size of the nest will reduce dramatically from a 40 to 60,000 population strong in the summer to 3,000 in the winter. All the gentlemen are kicked out because they have no purpose. Drones, the males of the species, do not provide guarding. They do not collect food. They do not collect water. They don't even feed themselves. So the ladies around November do not need that. So they kick them out and they reduce their population dramatically. The queen will even stop laying for a little bit. Then in February, a transformation occurs and she starts to emerge from her semi-dormant laying and she starts laying like crazy. And then once that first brood emerges, the populations really take off and they've got work to do. And so our job is to make sure that they have food to go forage.
Right. You're listening to Your Health, Real WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and we're interviewing the Elysium Honey Company, and we will get back to it.
And we're seeing some challenges in the winter because we're getting unstable climate conditions. We're seeing,
boy, that's the truth.
We're seeing record temperatures in February, and the bees, they leave the hive thinking it's time to go forage, but in the middle of February, there's no flowers. So we might get a 75-degree day, but no food for them. And so they're wasting energy looking for food. And so we're seeing some challenges with some atmospheric and weather-related conditions in the winter. And so it's critical that we leave the bees plenty of honey for food over the winter. So when we're harvesting the honey, we're making a very calculated decision on how much extra we can take, making sure that we leave them plenty of food resources throughout the winter.
Yeah, at this point, I'm leaving 40 pounds per hive for the winter.
Wow, that's a lot of honey.
That's a lot of honey. It's better for them to have their own food than supplements.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But to reiterate what Brian was saying about how the climate is changing, for example, this year we rely on a succession of blooms, and the tulip poplar is our largest nectar flow. And the tulip poplar bloomed. It wasn't rained out like it was the year prior. Everyone rejoiced until the next day when the black locust bloomed as well. And we rely on the black locust to follow the tulip poplar, not compete with it. So when we're losing a succession of sources and they're coming at the same time, it limits their ability to have a long-term harvest.
Wow. So, Carrie, you mentioned that the tulip poplar, you were looking forward to it, and then they were waterlogged? We got too much rain? Is that...
Sure. Yeah, I think everybody in Central Virginia can remember last year was a particularly wet summer, starting with a lot of rainfall coinciding with the tulip poplar bloom. So as a large flower, it collected a significant amount of water and got knocked to the ground. So we saw the evidence of the bloom, but unfortunately it was all on the ground and didn't support the bees at all.
Oh, no. Poor bees. So what did you do? I mean, what, obviously you didn't just sit there, you did, had to do something, right?
Well, I mean, if, unfortunately, there's only but so much you can do.
Right.
What we are doing as a company with these pollinator meadows is supporting the bees as much as we can, but certain things are outside of our control. And you are always at the whim of the planet when you're talking about managing a living animal. And so... You know, we did what we could with the plantings that we had, and you kind of cross your fingers. It is important to understand that although we are the Elysium Honey Company, our first priority is always to the bees' health. And so as Brooke was saying, we won't do anything to compromise our bees' lives for the sake of honey production. So while there may be some, you know, groups or organizations that would have harvested and even called it tulip poplar honey because we were aware of what happened with the tulip poplar, we simply didn't seek to produce a tulip poplar honey last year.
Well, that's environmentally conscious, I'll tell you that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds that I get this central thread throughout, you know, that's, you know, to keep the bees healthy is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got that right.
Yep.
Good.
Yeah.
And by leaving 40 pounds of honey per hive so that they've got enough food to winter over, mm-hmm. that's definitely, you know, a lot of people wouldn't do that.
And it's regional specific. So if you're in Vermont, you're going to leave 70 to 80 pounds if you want them to over winter. So, well, you know, it's a balance, and we keep detailed records, and we pay attention to what's happening in the environment, and we're able to adjust. But as Carrie was saying, there's only so much we can do about the weather.
Hence the importance of having a diverse landscape.
Right.
And not relying on a single crop.
That makes sense.
It reduces a lot of stress.
I know when I was coming in on the right-hand side about a mile down the road, I saw this huge monoculture of corn. And I'm going, what? What's wrong with this picture? Yeah. Now, they'll feed on cornflowers, right?
Well, corn is wind-pollinated. So, yes, they will harvest some pollens from corn when they're desperate, but it's not a very good protein source for them. So they prefer other.
Like the wildflowers, the tulip poplar, the black locust.
Right.
So trees are very important.
Trees are very important because they're abundant, and we have a lot of tulip poplar and locust in this area, and they can produce a lot of forage per unit. So one big tulip poplar tree can produce an incredible amount of nectar. But again, that's only flowering for a few weeks in the spring,
right.
And then what's next? And also, you know, the bees are like us. We don't fully understand the specifics of this yet, but just like we seek out certain medicines and herbs and food, vegetables, berries for our health needs, if we're sick, we might take, you know, a type of herb or a tea made of a couple of herbs to help us with a sore throat. Bees are doing the same thing. They need vitamins, they need minerals to complete life cycles, to medicate themselves. We don't understand a lot of this yet, but so they're going to seek out certain things at certain times of the year and also at certain times for their needs. Some flowers are producing a lot of nectar, some are producing pollen. They use the pollen to feed the young, they use the nectar to make honey, so having all of this available to them is really important.
Well, I've noticed a lot of clover around, so that I see the bees there all the time, you know, foraging off the clover, right?
Clover is very important for the bees,
mm-hmm.
and luckily for us, it's pretty widespread. Again, hopping off the mower for a little bit and letting that clover flower in your yard can go a long way to helping, especially someone that has a small backyard and is trying to manage bees.
Do you know if there's any appreciable difference between red and white clover?
Well, there are several species of clover that we find out on the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
The white clover is probably what most people are familiar with, and it's a perennial, so it keeps coming back. And then we see some red clovers and crimson clovers. And the bees use each one kind of differently. The white clover has a longer bloom but may not have, you know, necessarily the same nutrients that the crimson clover might have. But the crimson clover is only around early in the spring. So Brooke, the red clover is used a little bit less because of the length of the flower and the bee's specific tongue versus the white clover. And
relative. So the bees have a proboscis that will only access certain flowers. So they don't work on roses, for example, or lilies. But at the Elysium Honey Company, when Brian is establishing pollinator meadows, they're not honeybee meadows. They're for all native bees.
And we're back. We'll get back to the interview. Obviously, talking about bees and honey. It's wonderful. Back to it.
So when Brian puts in crimson clover that may not have a tremendous honeybee benefit, it is supporting other pollinators.
And all those different flowers. I mean, there's big bumblebees. There's small little leaf miner bees and sweat bees. And they use a lot of different flowers because of their specific niches in the ecosystem.
I know when I was a kid, I used to go and find red clover and just eat it, lots of it. And then I found out that there was a company in Australia that's using the red clover isoflavones, you know, to fight cancer. It's really neat. You know, it just goes in and hits the cancer cells. It doesn't do anything to the other cells around it. So it's obviously a pretty medicinal plant.
Yeah, that's really neat.
So that's I'll tell you, I like that you mentioned pollinator meadows, not specific to bees, because it, you know, it helps the environment as a whole.
Sure, you walk through one of these meadows in the spring and there's honeybees foraging, there's lots of different native bees, there's monarch butterflies, tiger swallowtails, there's indigo bunting birds singing from the top of one of the flowers. They're just thriving with life. It's pretty amazing.
So we are headed to the hives, and Brooke, you were going to tell us about some of these wildflowers.
Yeah, so right now we have black-eyed Susans emerging, and the Monarda, also known as bee balm, it has been sustaining the hive steadily for about 2 full weeks, and it's very tall and noticeable for its purple blooms. And I can see that the milkweed, which is one of our favorite nectar-producing plants, is coming into season, and so we're looking forward to a nice crop of honey from that.
Excellent. So what is this river or creek or?
It's the Metchum's River on our left.
Oh, okay. Metchum.
I believe that's its pronunciation, isn't it, Carrie?
We grew up saying Meacham.
Yeah, that's what I got.
Oh, see, I would say Meacham because it has 2 E's, but a local told me I was misinformed. So we're going to have to leave it.
The lighting is perfect right now. You can see basically the bee highway.
Yes!
Of the bees, you know, they go straight up into the air.
Right.
But we've got a great visual right now of them going back and forth to the hives. The sunlight's catching them perfectly.
They really are. Oh, my. Now, did I just see a wasp hanging out there?
Unfortunately, wasps are pollinators, too.
Okay, yeah.
So we support them as well.
Yeah. I definitely see one, so several. Oh, and there's a butterfly.
There's thousands.
Oh, my. They're all over. This is gorgeous, folks. I wish it wasn't radio. So she has a veil on me so I don't get stung on my nose or my eyes or my lips. Exceedingly painful. So now we're going to talk to the bees.
One way to make them really, really noisy is for me to open a lid. I can do one up there so you could stay back here.
Okay, let's try that.
This will air this better.
Yeah.
I'll get a little shorter.
I like how I hold the microphone with my bare hand.
Yeah, oh, right, there you go. Oh, there's a bee on it.
Yeah.
My, oh my. And you say to get behind the hive, then they won't think you're a bear.
Yeah, so there's a couple safe rules about approaching a hive. One, you don't want to attire yourself all in black as you did. Also avoid red because on their color spectrum they see black as red and black is associated with bears, so they tend to be a little more curious and defensive about people in black and red. Also tactile objects, something like suede, that also will aggravate them and irritate them. And when you approach a hive, try to avoid lots of smelly perfumes. I've noticed that Pert shampoo will really antagonize them. Don't tell Pert.
Yeah. Interesting.
And so you approach a hive from the side or the back. If you interrupt the front of the hive, just think of it as their highway.
Right.
Don't get in their way. They have jobs to do. And once you go into their way, they're going to pay a lot of attention to you. If you stand behind a hive, you're pretty much 100% safe. There's no 100%, but you understand that if you work around the bees and what their natural behaviors are, you really don't get stung.
And if you do, it is good for your arthritis if you have arthritis.
That's right.
Yeah. Heck yeah. It's medicine.
Yeah. But I think it's hilarious that you wore black again.
Now, Brooke, I have a friend that had hives. And I say had, the boxes are still there, but his bee population just died out. And it turned out to be mites?
Yeah, so the number one reason that bees are in decline in the United States today is from a parasitic mite known as Varroa destructor. And Varroa will parasitize the bees even before they emerge. So from the moment of their emergence, they have these open sores and they're being... actually parasitized.
Right.
So the bees will emerge with these mites, and the mites themselves don't kill them. They're vectors for 27 other diseases that will affect the overall health of the colony. So it takes some time, but right now we are running Varroa testing on all of our colonies and all of our apiaries. And what we're finding is that the Varroa levels, due to their biological cycle, they're rising as we would anticipate. So we are treating for Varroa mites in the next week. And what I would encourage all beekeepers to do is keep track of their Varroa levels. Even though you can't see the mites, it doesn't mean that they're not there. And they hide on the underside of the bees. So when you look at the back of a honeybee, you're not necessarily going to see it. And a lot of beekeepers look at their bees and they're like, well, they look healthy. But that's not really the portrait. So we do an alcohol wash test to get an accurate mite count. And we track our levels. And we find that by September, if there is a hive that has not been treated for Varroa, and they have a high count, they're going to have an almost 100% mortality rate. So a lot of hives that we go to visit for their dead outs, we call them, when we do a hive autopsy, 9 out of 10 times Varroa was the factor. Mm. And then the other factor is typically a pest issue. So bears, we'll have yellow jackets have taken out a weaker hive. So we have multiple factors, but 9 out of 10 times it's Varroa in this area.
Okay, and is there a treatment for that?
Yeah, there's multiple treatments that are according to the brood and honey cycles of the honeybees. There are 4 treatments that you can do depending on the season. And so we will be doing a thymol-based treatment very soon.
Excellent, excellent. Thanks, Brooke. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were saying the meadow is just now coming around or hasn't had its full capacity?
Correct. So I see echinacea coming through. I also see some solidago or goldenrod coming up, which is great. Goldenrod mm-hmm. is one of our most beneficial fall nectar-providing plants. We really rely on it heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And also sumac is wonderful, and I see some Joe Pye weed. Just a lot of different choices for them to
I love this meadow.
On.
Oh, it's so natural.
It's a different definition of beauty.
It really is, and there's little patches of different species. They find their own little, seem to find their own little area, you know?
Yeah.
So we're going to hang out here.
Yeah, interestingly enough, honeybees will not consume and harvest a diverse array at once. So when they look at a cell to fill, they will only put one flowering pollen plant in each one and each nectar. So when we harvest frames, we can pull out a frame of honey and it will be a different color, and we know that they harvested, say, a tulip versus a black locust, and we can separate and harvest frame by frame. And it's interesting to see how the bees have chosen to make a monofloral frame. It's
wow.
Really fun. Like when you think about what they're out there doing, they go back to their hive and they're like, hey, Susie, found this echinacea patch. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they just all hit it. So as tests with the Environmental Science Academy, I'll take out a frame of honey that is almost emptied out, and I can stick it outside the classroom before the class, and by the end of the class, there's thousands of bees on it. Because all it took was one worker to forager to find that honey frame and go back and tell our sisters, and within 30 minutes, everyone's there. That's how quickly they can disseminate information. That's really neat. Like, they don't have walkie-talkies. They're dancing on
they
the frames.
They have dance moves.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So, you were mentioning goldenrod, Brooke, and, you know, the first thing I think of is allergies. but you said something really interesting.
Yeah, it's one of the most beneficial fall plantings that we have accessible to us in Virginia that is also a native. They support over 110 different pollinators, not just honeybees, so their environmental impact is tremendous.
Wow. Now, let's talk about honey.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we try to emulate and to educate people on is the different kinds of honey that exist. So we are both a local and international honey company. We partner with beekeepers in Italy, France, and Hungary to bring in specific monofloral honeys that we can't produce here in the United States. So citrus blossom, a specific French lavender honey, Hungarian acacia, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that question gets raised a lot is why are we bringing in international honeys? And it's really twofold. One, because we like to offer people an experience of just how varied the world of honey flavors is. You know, just based on what the bee forages has a significant effect on not just the flavor, but the appearance of the honey. The colors range from bright yellow to dark as maple syrup, depending on the pollen content that the bee foraged on. And side by side, when you try these different honeys, it's a great expression of the terroir that existed for those bees. So we do honey tastings that are just like wine tastings, where we invite people to first smell the variations in the honey and then really taste them and go into what those flavor profiles are, and even just the different levels of crystallization depends on the enzyme. So there are some honeys that take years to crystallize, and there are some that crystallize so rapidly that the beekeepers actually have to work with urgency when they're harvesting it. And the sign of crystallization is a sign of quality. There is a problem in America that we have a lot of honeys that are actually heated to the point where they kill the natural health properties that exist in the honey simply so that it looks better on the shelf. And one thing that we would love to do and continue to do is to educate the consumers about the honey that they purchase. Just because something says that it's local, it can in fact be from places like China, and it can just mean that it was simply bottled here. So it's very important to know your beekeeper, know your source from which your honey is coming, because there are a lot of nefarious labeling practices that exist right now in the American honey industry. If people want to do a deep dive into that specific aspect of bees and honey, there is a series called Rotten on Netflix, and the very first episode explores what's going on in our honey industry. And I know for the first time that I saw it, it was shocking. It is definitely an industry where the consumers are being lied to. So we try for complete transparency here. Our labels not only say where the honey comes from, but when it was harvested and who the beekeeper was even. So we narrow it down very specifically so that when you're looking at it on the shelf, all the facts are there.
Man, and I got to tell you, folks, I got a sample the last time, and it was crystallized. And I kind of looked at her funny, and she said, no, and educated me on that and mentioned that chefs love it because you can measure it. And that's so true. And also, you can spread it on toast much easier. And it just, it was so good, by the way.
I'm glad you enjoyed
excellent,
it.
Excellent. So we're going to be buying your products. Where can we find your products?
So we have a number of local partners, and different stores carry different expressions. Mm-hmm. Feast, Beer Run, the Greenwood Market here near Batesville. We're at Olivia in Barracks Road, or Oliva, Peace Frogs, Tillman's. See, we've got a Barbersville Vineyard as well. We are spread out around the community. It's been wonderful to be supported by so many local partners.
You're listening to Your Health right here on WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we're back. This is MC Blair, and I've been talking to the Elysium Honey Company, Carrie and Brian and Brooke. Wonderful, wonderful news. And I'm going to pull you back to the last state, one of the last statements that Kerry made, and that is the American public is being lied to, folks. We are being lied to by the International Honeycomb. Well, I should international, by the United States, USDA. They are great at doing that. They lie to us constantly in order to sell products, and it doesn't make sense at all. And so we need to change that. So get out and vote. That's all I can tell you. The more voters we have, the better off we will be. More representation. So on that note, let's get back and go through the last 5 minutes or so of the interview with the Elysium Honey Company.
That we've really been embraced by the community.
So one question I have is, how can the public that, say, don't actively participate with an apiary or, you know, intern over here or help, how can they help?
By being more informed consumers about their shopping habits. And that's not just pertaining to honey, but supporting small businesses is one of the first ways to impact your environment, less carbon footprint, your food didn't have to travel as far, and just looking at the labels, as difficult as that can be sometimes because there is wiggle room there, it starts with just being an informed consumer about where what you're eating is coming from, and also by making steps to eat seasonally. It's
locavore.
Yes, exactly. And that gets more difficult, as we all know, in the wintertime. We all get a little sick of squash. By doing that, it has a big impact. And by the meat industry, we have a phenomenal relationship with Polyface Farm and JM Stock Provisions, both of which are groups that are really focused on a more sustainable practice for buying meats that were raised properly. So it starts with just where you spend your dollars.
That's true. What's the future? What does the future look like? So, Brooke, you were saying, from a commerce standpoint, when people buy the honey, you're able to keep the bees alive.
Yeah, it directly impacts my ability to do this for a living, to buy the medications that support them, to create proper environments that keep them safe. Bear fences are expensive. We have a lot of expenses, and when people buy the honey, they're directly supporting keeping the local honeybee population alive. We had an incredibly successful overwintering rate, and we're doing good work for the local environment and for the bees, and I appreciate it when people buy Elysium honey.
Man, I'll tell you, that says it all. It really does. And what's your website?
The ElysiumHoneyCompany.com. So okay. ElysiumHoney.com.
ElysiumHoney.com. And they can buy products over online, is that correct?
Absolutely. I would encourage people, if they're local, to make those purchases at a local store. But if somebody is listening from outside of the Charlottesville area, we have direct shipping available, and we are always happy to spread the honey throughout the country.
That's great. That's great. Well, thanks, guys. It's really been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you.
It was fun to talk to you.
So we were talking about the future of the Elysium Honey Company and, honey in general, I guess.
Sure. I think for us, one of the most important elements of our company is the educational side of things. Mm-hmm. Diego, our head beekeeper, teaches at local elementary schools. And he goes in to talk to the students about the importance of pollinators from a very young age. And I think that the future of many things that are in trouble right now rely on the youth. As cheesy as it sounds, they really are our future. And if we expose them to the idea that bugs aren't scary, that they have a purpose, and particularly our pollinators are meant to be rejoiced and celebrated, that's where you lay the foundation for the future. And as dire as certain things are that we're seeing right now, the more that people commit their dollars and their time, and that schools open up opportunities for beekeepers and scientists to come in and talk to students, the brighter that future becomes. And so we really do feel strongly that programs like what Diego is doing with our youth are the way forward.
I totally agree with that, because as we mentioned earlier, they will become engaged and hopefully continue forward.
Absolutely. So, one of the things that Brooke said to me a long time ago when we were first really starting this project was, the absence of bees is frightening. The presence of bees is not. And that is a mental shift that I think I even had to go through, because, you know, you have a reaction of, oh my gosh, it's a bee. But really what should be more concerning to people is when you go through a summer day and you don't see one.
It's all part of nature's symphony.
Yes, it is.
Well, there you have it, folks. And it is all part of nature's symphony. And I'll tell you, when I was down there, and that's what I heard. I mean, you heard the bees and the birds and all that. It's just so calming. Just so calming. It takes the stress away. I recommend going out to a woods somewhere by yourself and just stand there and listen. It's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And go early, because it's going to be very hot. And also, on that note, if you're older, make sure you're staying cool, folks. Right now, it feels like 100 outside, and it's going to feel much hotter. And then when it gets into the hundreds, which I predict we will have several days of 100 degree plus, then it's going to feel like 110 or 115. And that's very dangerous for especially older folks. It's dangerous for all of us. To make sure you stay hydrated, make sure you have plenty of salt. If you've been working out in the yard, make sure you take some salt tablets or just eat some salt. And my friend Matt Rohde of Carpe Donut was telling me he had been out all day yesterday and, perspiring like crazy, of course. It was hot. And he got home, felt a little faint, took some salt, put it on his hand, and touched his tongue to it, and did not taste salty at all. So he started drinking water, and he drank one big glass, then tried salt again. It sort of tasted a little salty, and drank some more water, and finally it tasted really salty. So that's what happens. Your salt goes down, your water goes down, you get dehydrated, and you can die. Absolutely. You can die. Your body can just shut down. And so that's why it's so important to stay cool during these dangerously hot times that we're having. And, of course, Brian mentioned that, you know, as the planet warms, February, March, all of a sudden, is going to be warmer. And certain, animals will think, oh, my gosh, it's time to wake up. And so you'll have bears coming out of hibernation early, which can be devastating to certain species. When the bears, you know, what they eat, they start to eat early, and then as they eat them towards the end of the summer, they're supposed to go hibernating, and it's still warm. Oh my gosh, it's a never-ending cycle. You know, it's going to be devastating. So stay cool, stay calm. And that's the main thrust of this show, as a matter of fact. So we're going to be having some really great guests coming out here, some food service professionals, some professional medical folks, some doctors, that sort of thing. And I'm now going to, I was running around the city market, and I got some folks talking in the city market. It's pretty cool. So we will hear that right now.
City Market, and I'm talking with a customer. First name?
Carly.
Carly. Carly, what do you like about kombucha?
Just the health benefits, and just it's just great during a hot day, and just really refreshing.
Okay, good. Yeah. Nice. Excellent. And Ashley Crosby is the vendor here, and with Mountain Culture Kombucha. Ashley, tell us about your product a little bit.
Well, we try and keep it simple. We try and stay with the original flavors of the kombucha and not over sugar it or add anything excessive, and just try and keep it nice and simple.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks.
I am now at Carpe Donut, and my good friend Matt Rohde with Carpe Donut. How are you this morning, Matt?
Oh, it's lovely out. It's not hot at all.
I know, right? So, how's business?
Brisk so far. I think definitely people like to get out to the farmer's market as early as they can, but we'll have plenty of cold drinks later on if you're not making the early bird special today, thank you, man, then by all means come out whenever you can.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. His donuts are great, folks, and he's got all kinds of different toppings, and he actually just added a scotch glaze.
Added a scotch glaze by customer request, and we actually have now stopped adding bacon to the maple donuts until I can get some truly local farm-raised bacon ends. I'm talking to a couple different farmers. Don't want to use commercial bacon anymore. It's one of those decisions that we have to make periodically.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Health is everything, isn't it, Matt?
Well, we're not necessarily health food, but we like to think about the health of the planet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And now I'm with Ara. What's your last name, Ara?
Avagyan.
Okay. So you're Double H Farm.
Yes, yes, I'm a Double H Farm. The best thing, what I'm doing, I like to see happy customer.
Right.
And I love growing vegetables, and like I'm talking with vegetable, and I'm see with the customer's appreciation. It give me just a... keep doing this, what I'm doing.
Yes, yes, you have wonderful vegetables. I get your broccoli all the time. You gave me some peaches. I love those. Your eggs, your pork chops, chicken.
And
a full service vendor.
And anything you do with your heart looks like get a full appreciation from people.
Right, exactly.
Yes, that's what I like. And then I see from my customer's face all the time.
Yeah.
Every Saturday.
Yeah.
I'm tired, but I'm coming here. It's morning. I have some early bird customer. They just come and make my day happy, and that's it.
Oh, that's a great day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Actually, they could buy a chicken here or a pork roast and get all the vegetables to go with it, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. One-stop shop sometimes.
Yeah, and then get peaches for dessert.
Yeah. We have a peaches this year. I think we're going to have more next year and more planting. I'm doing more tree I have planted. Yeah, I like when customers stop by and get a little bit tree, a little bit of everything, you know.
Yes.
That's the best part. Again, like I said, that's the best part.
So business is pretty good this year?
Yeah, that's from Mother Nature. So far we have good dry weather. Makes lots of flavor, tomatoes and fruits and I believe everything. Yes,
yes. Yes.
And we have less fungus this year.
And less fungus.
Yes.
Oh, that's
fungus.
That's very good. That's very good.
Yeah. Even my bees get produced this year. We have lots of honey. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Right.
Apiary. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They happy pollinate all these squashes, cukes, and watermelons. Yeah.
Well, there you have it, folks. Double H Farm at the City Market each and every Saturday. So, Chad, how long have you been working with Ara from Double H?
I don't know, Ara. Since when? 10 years? 12 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. I come up here and hang out and have a good time.
Yeah.
See all my friends.
Yeah.
Celebrate food.
All right. Celebrate food. That's it.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
That's right. Yeah. No, we have a good time.
Excellent.
I'm happy to help Ara. He does a great job. Wonderful vegetables. Great meat products. Eggs that are the best in the market.
I agree. They're my choice.
And it's the old adage, when you have a good product to sell, it sells itself.
So that's exactly right.
I like to do that.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks, Chad. I am now at the Caramont Farm stand and talking with Emily. And you're an intern there, or you work full-time?
I work part-time.
Part-time?
Yes,
okay.
I'm a paid employee.
Oh, okay. How is it working down there?
It's great. I just get to hang out with the animals. I'm a farmhand, so I take care of the babies, I milk the mamas, and then I do the farmer's market a couple times a month to help out Gail Hobbs Page, who right. I love very much. She's
yes.
a great boss. We're very into farm-to-table. We want people to know where their food comes from and understand agriculture, so it's a great place to work.
And your cheeses can be found all over the Charlottesville area, right?
Yeah, mostly at Feast, and then the farmer's markets here and in Nellie'sford. And then we sell to like Cavalier, so a lot of restaurants have it.
Right, okay. Oh, that's awesome. So everything's great in Goatland, right?
Everything's great in Goatland.
Awesome. Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.
I am now speaking with Doug Zemanek. He's with Pork Stork. That's a forest-raised pork. The only way to go, I think, in this heritage breeds, animal welfare approved, very, very important, and part of Virginia's finest program. So how's business?
Our business is good.
Okay.
We do mostly farmers markets right now. We just started. It's our second year. We have it in a store up in Orange County called Red, White, Blue, and Brew, and we also support a local restaurant up there called General Quarters in Locust Grove. But business is great. We have a lot of acreage. We let them forage through our area. We move them from pen to pen. The nice thing about what we do is that we're animal welfare approved. It's great. I mean, the pigs live a very happy life. They only have that one bad day in their life.
Yeah. Well, but they're allowed to express their pigginess, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
No,
yeah.
But we're just very happy to be here. We do a lot of markets. Tend to be more in Northern Virginia
right.
and the D.C. area, but we come down to Charlottesville on Saturday morning. It's a great market down here.
So you do heritage breeds.
We have two breeds that are geared towards foraging. One is a red wattle.
Okay.
And one is a large black. They're both geared for the foraging. Large black is a very good tasting meat. It wins most of the cooking contests nationally.
Oh, wow.
When they cook it, it's a I think it's, I forget the, it's Shaken, Shogun 555 is
right.
a group that does it. They have chefs come in, and usually the large blacks win.
I'll be darned.
The fat is very flavorful, and if you can see, pork fat is a very nutritious.
It is.
Actually, it's the eighth most nutritious food there is. It's very high in vitamin B. It's listed up there. We also give some of the pork fat to our dogs, which is very healthy
Absolutely,
for them.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they also get the bones.
Well, I like to take the leaf fat and render my own lard.
Normally, my wife, who's working the other market today, Frauke is her name, she sells the lard. So we do sell lard, and it's great for baking.
I got to tell you, folks, if you ever want the best pie crust yep. known, you do a local pork lard for your fat, and yep. oh my goodness, leave yep. the butter at home because yep. it's better than butter.
Yes, I use it for all my recipes. I yes. replace lard with replace butter with lard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
You are listening to Your Health on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice, the voice of resistance right here in Charlottesville. And that will do it.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating over 20 years of sustainable fine dining on Downtown Mall. And by Rebecca's Natural Foods in Barracksford Shopping Center. Be listening again next Saturday morning at 11 for To Your Health.